Hi, this is John O'Hare from Clear Lake, Iowa. And this episode is brought to you by Ivy Envy Patreon supporters like me. Learn more at patreon.com/IvyEnvy. Next!
Hi, and thanks for downloading this, the 400th episode of the IVMV podcast. On this episode, we're going to talk about a few events coming up. We'll talk about the series with the Brewers that the Cubs just wrapped up today. The Brewers won that series 2-1. We'll answer some listener questions. Kurt will preview the upcoming series with the Giants, and Andy will share a Rube Waddell story. I am one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and I am joined by the other two hosts of this podcast.
Hey, it's Andy.
And Kurt.
400 episodes, guys.
Wow.
That's not enough. We have our work cut out for us.
right. So to celebrate, I mean, normally on these, like, you know, on these 100th episodes, every 100, we've done something special. This is the first time where it's just been like, yeah, let's just do a regular episode. But what are you guys celebrating? What are you drinking
tonight? We're taking after Cardinals fans, and you got to act like you've been there before.
What are you guys drinking?
Oh, I got nothing that special. I have some Goose Island Pilsner. From the Hy-Vee grocery.
Doesn't sound like a terrible choice.
No. What are you drinking, nice. Andy?
Warm weather.
I have a Left Hand Extrovert IPA. It's all right.
Yeah. I'm drinking our Old Standby Uncommon Stout.
Nice.
Yep. It's pretty good. It's good. But so I was kind of, you know, over the last week, I've been thinking about this 400th episode, and it feels like, I mean, doesn't it feel like I should be more than that? Doesn't it feel like we've done a lot more than 400?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. For sure. But I don't know. 400 is a lot.
It is. Yeah. And I've been thinking, and I think if you've listened to this podcast for a while, you'll know some of the things that have just kind of become like part of the fabric of IVMV. I guess, you know, Chuck Mangione, for example. There's several things, you know, just sayings or things that have kind of taken a life of their own. But I was thinking, you know, we did a lot of episodes early on, and there was just a fraction of people listening then that do now. And so do you guys have any like favorite memories maybe from early on?
I mean, mine weren't particular. They're very much not Cubs related, more like situational. And so a lot of mine are like, you know, when we used to record out in the patio at your place in Moline, we're all in the same general town, live within a few miles of each other. So we got together every Saturday and sat on the patio and,
yeah,
recorded, like, I don't know. Those are the kind of things that stick out. And then, you know, we'd have game watches out there. That was a lot of fun. Basically, like, the locations we've moved from place to place. You know, the Jason's dining room for a long time.
Yeah.
The old basement studio.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, one of my memories that I was thinking about today is from when we recorded on our patio. And do you remember when my neighbor wandered into the yard? And just kind of wondered what we were doing back there with microphones, and then decides to invite himself on the podcast and sat down and started talking about all of the C words that are somewhat affiliated with the Cubs. All the words that start with C.
I seem to remember, like, every time somebody said a C word, he'd be like, that's a C word.
Oh, man.
Wish I knew what episode that was off the top.
Yeah,
it had to have been in the first. I bet it was around number 50. Yeah, I think it might have been like the first year. I bet it was right around in there in the beginning. But I mean, all those were Jason recording us. So, you know, I think really what Jason, you know, he since has moved to St. Louis. And wasn't even that big of a Cubs fan, not really a big baseball fan, but really helped us out like when we most needed it, when we were first starting and we had no idea what we were doing recording wise. So, I mean, I'm not sure we would be here without Jason, really.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely remembered all the work he would. And then when we recorded on the patio, he would sit inside the bar, like in a hole, like then record. And then he offered us his dining room. Probably because he didn't want to sit in there, but yeah, all the hours he put in for little or nothing in return. That was pretty great. Same with all the co-hosts we've had,
right?
Over the time we've had a few off and on. So, yeah, it's been great.
Yeah. You know, and I was kind of thinking back, like some of the terms or whatever, you know, like most recently get in the box, like that just kind of took, you know, a life of its own or whatever. And I was trying to remember some of the things that, like, I don't know, kind of would have stuck had we had more of an audience. And one stood out to me. Do you guys remember what the nickname that we gave Mike Quaddy?
No, what was it?
Neckfurters. Oh, yeah. Simply because the back of his neck looked like a package of hot dogs.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, those were the days when we mostly talked about appearances rather than baseball.
Yeah. Oh, man. But yeah, I don't know. It's been fun, you know, and I think these 100 episodes are, you know, those marks are good times to look back and think about, you know, all the different stuff we've done and some of the things that, you know, I probably would be embarrassed about if we did it now. But, you know, it's cool that, you know, I was thinking back to like interviewing Baez and Schwarber, Vogelbach, Matt Caesar. I mean, that was really cool. And, you know, being able to do some things officially with the Cubs in a official capacity, that's been really cool, and spring training and everything. So,
you know, one other thing, just to sort of for the newcomers who are sort of thinking like if you missed out on anything early, last year's playoffs was probably one of the most like special community moments we had, and just like
the
excitement of it all. And then when we did the recordings after everyone, you know, even though that's really recent, it was pretty fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was kind of thinking about this too, that I was trying to think of like how I would describe our podcast. Cause you know, when people ask me like, oh, you do a Cubs podcast, it's like, yeah, we just kind of talk about the Cubs. And I was thinking like, if I really kind of had to like sum up exactly what IVNB is, I think I would just play Danny Rocket's song, Ivy and Gioni, because I think that sums up our podcast. So I think I will play that song at the end of our episode. So anyways, yeah, thanks for, you know, if you're listening to this, thanks for at some point in those 400 episodes finding us and deciding to stick around. We appreciate it as we take forever to get into Cubs talk here tonight. So I guess we should talk about this series with the Brewers that the Cubs just wrapped up. And I'll just kind of say that I don't have a lot to say about this series. First off, it's been a chaotic week. I coach my daughter's softball team, and I'm the president of our town's baseball association, and I'm trying to get our field, concession stand, facilities, our lights aren't working. So a lot of things going on. Everything starts next week. So I wasn't able to watch these games. I did listen to bits and pieces. But do you guys have any thoughts on these games?
Yeah, I was only able to watch one full game, and then I listened to a little bit of the other two. But one thing that stands out to me about the series is there's people that are like going crazy about the Cubs losing 2 out of 3 to the Brewers. You know, and we were talking about people getting upset when the Cubs lose this season so far, and it just seems so bonkers.
Right.
But I just wanted to check people a little bit on that. I mean, is that, like last year the Cubs were 14-14 in May, and we all know that the outcome of the season last season was pretty darn good. So they were 500 in May last year, and they're 11-6 so far in May 2016. And they lost some games to some bad teams last season too. I mean, they lost 2 out of 3 to the Brewers in May last year. They of course had that Phillies series that really, you know, as Pat would put it, that seemed like a turning point for the season. had the real turning point feel to it. And they were 3-3 against the Padres, which was a pretty bad team last year. Mm-hmm. And so they're, I don't know, like, do people still honestly expect them to go like 120 and, you know, 42 or whatever? I don't understand that.
Yeah. Yeah. I
think, yes, some people are getting spoiled a little bit maybe, but.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think they just got off to such a hot start that we were used to them winning every single day. And, you know, if there's a day that people can't, you know, put Wilbur outside to flap in the wind, then it's, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, what's wrong? And you still look, I mean, okay, what's their record right now is, what is it? I don't have it pulled up. 28-11. We should know this.
Oh, fudge, man.
28-11.
I don't think that's right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. Okay, you're right. You're right.
All right, so you're gonna have to splice it in. Right when what is the record right now? And then you're gonna splice in Kurt saying 28-11.
He's saying yep.
Right. Yep. That's right. Now, but I mean that is you know 17 games over 500, and it's frustrating to lose a couple games to the Padres and lose a couple games, you know, lose a series to the Padres, lose a series to the Brewers. That's frustrating. But, I think there's some explanations. And then there's just the fact that this team is going to lose baseball games. It's just going to happen, you know. So I think we're seeing some low offensive production right now. And personally, I don't think that's anything to be alarmed about. It's not as fun to watch as when the team is playing well, but it's a 162 game season and there's going to be stretches like this. And Tuesday was frustrating. The Cubs were facing a 1-5 pitcher with a 6 or something ERA and he almost throws a no hitter. But we've seen the Cubs struggle against pitchers like this and it's going to happen. But you know, when you really, if you try to pinpoint, you know, one, I guess, reason that this is happening right now, you have to look at the run, you know, how they're hitting with runners in scoring position. It just in this series, they went a combined, one for 24, including going 0 for 13, in the, extra innings game. But that's just going to happen. It's all going to balance out. And they were early in the season in April, in the first half of May, it just seemed like they were emptying the bases before, you know, and now things have dried up a little bit. And I don't think that it's anything to worry about. I think hitting with runners in scoring position is something that evens out over time. So,
yeah, for sure. And they struck out a lot too. I mean, they struck out 15 times in today's game, which is a lot. So yeah, the offense has been scuffling a little bit, and it's maybe worth pointing out that the two losses were a Hamill start and a Hendricks start.
Right.
And so, I mean, obviously, like, their bottom end guys are going to lose every once in a while, too. You know, I mean, Hamill gave up 4 earned runs in today's game. I'm sorry, maybe it was 5. He gave up 4 earned runs. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's correct. And then also, I think Hendricks gave up 4 earned runs in his start. The starting pitching has been great, including these guys, but it makes sense that they're going to lose some of the games that their 4-5 starters start. It's just going to happen.
Sure. Yeah. And I still stand
by. And those guys could have. Sorry, Corey.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say those guys could have had very different outings, too, if they got even 1 or 2 runs early where the Cubs just didn't score anything. And they looked really great. Like, Hendricks was fantastic through his, like, first, what, 4 innings or something? And then, you know, got hit. So it could have been, like I said, different with a little bit of earlier run support. But
yeah,
there was definitely some contrasts where, you know, the first game they just had nothing going. Second game they got some stuff going but couldn't get them in. So, but yeah, like you said, I mean, it's one series and it's frustrating to lose to the Brewers, but time to move on.
Right. I mean it's just something where, like, it doesn't really impact, again, 17 games over 500. And to be honest, I still stand by, you know, by my opinion that stretches like this are not all bad for this team. I think it's a young team that needs the experience of digging out of a slump. and digging out of, you know, maybe getting guys on base but not being able to get them in. I think the more things that this team sees this season will make them better at the end of the season. And to be honest, I think it's good for Cubs fans too. You know, like,
sure.
It'll be nice that if the Cubs drop a series or get swept in August, that we can say, well, think back to that, you know, when they played the Padres and the Giants, or the Padres and the Brewers. It's going to be nice to kind of like refer back to those things and be able to show that, like, yes, this team does pull out of things, because I have confidence that they're going to. So, I think it's just kind of, it's good for the team, because I don't necessarily want the regular season to be a breeze for the Cubs, because then if they are on their heels, close to the playoffs or during the playoffs, they may not know how to respond to that. And, I don't want to see them lose, but I don't think it's all bad that if they go through little stretches like this.
Yeah, it's a great experience. It can be a learning experience. One other thing that I would add to what you said too is a lesson here is, I'm not saying that they necessarily did this, but you can't ever overlook anyone, you know, no matter who the opponent is. You can't take anything for granted. And so I don't think that's the case with them necessarily. But if it is, I mean, series like this would be a good lesson. That being said, I mean, I think Madden does a good job at, you know, preparing them and helping them to play every game to their utmost ability. But
yeah, I'm Ed in the live broadcast chat right now. He just said recent losses are frustrating, but the Cubs are still on pace to win 116 games. So kind of putting into perspective there.
Yeah. And to go along with what Andy said too, like, you know, May, June isn't a bad time to sort of level off either, because like they did it last year, they were kind of 500 for both of those months and then really kicked it in July, August, September. So if you get a repeat of that, we'll forget about May and June pretty easily.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't really have anything else to say about the series. I mean, I just think there's no point in like really dissecting things. Although
I want to kind of touch on the awesomeness of the bases loaded, nobody out, wiggle out last night, where I think one of the coolest parts of it was the shuffling of the position players, where, let's see if I might get this wrong, but I'm going to try from memory. But like, so Bryant comes in to play third with an extra infielder, Then he swaps with Baez and they trade gloves so that Bryant's playing first and Baez is playing third. Then Baez goes back to first, Bryant goes back to left, all in the same happening. The switching gloves, like, that was just so awesome. Just so funny, just because it was still Sandlot. So what you did when you were a kid. Not that I ever had a first baseman's glove or anything, but, you know, just kind of a crazy situation where they were just, like, scrambling all over the field and then they get out of it. So that's when, you know, to quote Pat, that was the sort of turning point in the
I just feel like Madden gets so lucky sometimes.
I know.
But it was funny, though, like, Bryant gave Baez his glove, and then Baez put it on for a second and then was like, nah, I'm just going to go get mine. He like went to the dugout to get his. But
so I think Bryant used three different gloves.
Yeah. but that was fun. That was really fun. I mean, I was pretty amazed that they went on to win that game, in all honesty. I don't think I've ever seen any crazy shifting shenanigans like that work out well. Not that, like, it was exactly that got them through that inning, is the Brewers like popped up on the infield three times in a row, I think.
Yep.
But man, that was entertaining.
Well, and if you want, sure. I mean, if you want to talk about the versatility of this team, that's it in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we kind of, one of our over unders was like, I think one was like, how many does Baez play in a game? Or maybe it was Bryant.
It was how many he plays this season.
Like, oh, well, it's not going to be that many.
I think it was how many he played this season, and I was like, two.
Yeah, he plays three and
he
a
played
half
three inning, and so. A half inning. Because I expected, oh, you know, it's going to be a little bit more stable as far as the defensive stuff goes, but Yeah,
but yeah,
it was nice to get
definitely
that win,
the
though.
Sort of highlight of this not so great series.
Yeah, it's gonna
well,
be...
and can I say this? The same game too. Didn't Madden have Cahill pinch hit earlier in the game?
Yeah,
and he made really good hard contact too. He just hit it to somebody.
Right, but I mean, this goes to my point with like Madden is like, hey, you guys remember the game where I had Cahill pinch hit and we went on to win? You know, I mean. He just everything he does like just seems to turn to gold somehow.
Yeah.
Which is great. I mean, I'll take it every single time. But I in that same game too, I wanted to point out like David Ross just was killing it.
Yes.
Yeah. As he picked off Jonathan Lucroy as he kind of caught him leaning too far, I think, on second base.
Yeah, that was a really interesting one because
that's where he ran out.
Where he ran out and they got him in a pickle and he ran all the way to the shortstop position and basically.
Yeah. That was one of those moments where I was watching with my wife and I said, like, those are the things that I think a lot of people don't notice about fundamentally how you play certain positions that like if I were watching with my son who was already asleep. Thankfully, you know, you'd point out those kind of things. Like if you ever catch, like that's how you do it kind of stuff.
Right.
And I mean, and he was pumped. He was jacked after that, you know, cause he kind of, I don't know, bailed out Lackey a little bit there, I believe. And then he also threw out three runner, you know, people trying to steal as well in that same game. I mean, he was on fire in that game.
Yeah.
Ligaments be damned.
Yeah. It's fun to, he's been a ton of fun. Well, you know what I'm trying to say. He's been a lot of fun to watch this season. I mean, because he really is out there just playing like crazy. Like, and you can tell, like, I remember a game, it must have been in the Padre series where he tried to pick someone off of first base and you could tell he knew he didn't get him, but he wanted it so bad. Like, you know, like he's just like, they're like notches on his bedpost, you know, on his headboard. His headboard.
You can put Jonathan Lucroy.
Yeah, he just goes home at night and he's like, "Yep, I got three more." Yeah, I don't have much else to say about the series. Do you guys?
No.
Yeah.
Not really. I mean, it's just one to kind of like just shake off and have a short memory about. And they're going to have to. I mean, they're going out to face the Giants. And I know Kurt's going to talk about that a little bit. But they just
it's
have
kind
to
of an awkward
on.
Scheduling.
It's terrible.
Like Milwaukee to San Francisco and then back to St. Louis.
Yeah, especially with.
That's kind of a rough trip.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're three night games, you know, on a weekend, which is kind of rare. And, but I just think it's going to be good to get out of Milwaukee, you know, maybe like heading out west to, you know, change the scenery, kind of be good for this team. And I don't know. I was ready for this like Brewer series to end after like the first game. It just felt weird.
Mm-hmm.
There's your marginal analysis.
The whole series thing just kind of felt weird. Well, I mean, it doesn't help that like the roof was closed, I think for at least two of the games. And it gives it that like feel of like we're working under fluorescent lights.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Type of thing where it feels, I don't know, it feels like they're in a warehouse or something. And so it's like a stark contrast from sunny Wrigley Field to go to, I don't know, I feel like I'm at work, like I'm working under fluorescent lights when I'm watching the Cubs play at Miller Park with the roof closed.
Yeah.
I get that same vibe too. Like when I watch those games, like same in Arizona when they play there, it's like, it just has that, very closed in feel.
Like, let's get these packages on the cart, you know, and, you know, down the conveyor belt type of situation. Turn in your TPS reports and get Bernie down that slide. We need those packages up on the plane stat.
Oh boy! All right. So before we get to some listener questions here, let's talk about some events coming up. How about John Baker Day? Let's start there. So Danny Rocket and I, we did a blab on Monday night and announced John Baker Day. And so if you did not hear that, I put it in the podcast feed. But if you missed it, July 29th, 2014. That's the night that John Baker earned a win as the pitcher and then scored the winning run in the bottom of the 16th inning. And so we are doing an event to celebrate that the 2-year anniversary with John Baker himself. And it's at Nisei Lounge and on July 29th. And yeah, all the details are at ivmv.com/John Baker. But basically what we're doing is it costs $25. That gets you a John Baker t-shirt that Kurt, you and kind of collaborated with Randall. And it looks good. I think it's amazing, actually. And John Baker really got a kick out of it. So you did a good job with that. And so that t-shirt, a drink ticket, and then we're going to do, Danny's going to play, the Ballad of John Baker, and, we're going to do like a little Q&A thing with Baker, probably focusing kind of on that night, you know, and his experience with it. And then Katie Day is also going to be there to perform by the lakeside. So it's at Nisei Lounge. It's going to be a ton of fun. We've already sold, a lot of tickets, the space is limited. We're limited to at the most tickets we can sell is 180. That's all that can fit in there according to the fire code, I guess. So don't wait around. And a lot of people have asked like about the t-shirts, that they like them so much. They want to be able to get the t-shirts. We couldn't really figure out. I mean, all the proceeds are going to Cubs charities. That's, we asked, you know, John to pick a charity for the proceeds to go to, and that's what he chose, was Cubs Charities. So whether you go or not, it's $25. So you can get the t-shirt for $25, and then all your proceeds are going to good causes and to help the community. So you can go, you can purchase all that at ivmb.com/John Baker. And then of course there is a game that afternoon, and if you would like to kind of join the group, just buy bleacher tickets. You know, bleachers are general admission, so you can do that or sit anywhere you want. Bleachers are kind of expensive on that day. It's a Friday. So it would probably be cheaper to find other tickets somewhere. But if you would like to sit with the group, then you can do that. And yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. We also have some things that we're going to present to John Baker. It should be fun, but we don't want to talk about it yet until everything's all nailed down. So. And there will be more details coming out, you know, about that event as things get a little more solidified. So, again, ivmv.com/John Baker. And, yeah, come hang out. It should be a lot of fun. And all three of us are going to be there, and all three hosts of the Sun Ranto podcast are going to be there. So that should be a lot of fun, cool, too. If you listen to both of our podcasts, it's probably one of the only times that all six of us would be in the same place. And then, we haven't talked about this lately, guys, but, Weekend at the Lake, do you guys want to kind of, summarize that real quick?
Yeah, we do. If you, think you would enjoy the, you know, some camaraderie with Cubs fans in a pastoral setting, you would enjoy the Weekend at the Lake. We'll be camping, fishing, talking Cubs, hanging out around campfire, boating, playing wiffle ball, going to Duffy's. So if you like dive bars, it's going to have a lot of stuff going for it. So I think it should be pretty fun.
But not just wiffle ball, any wiffle ball, but the best wiffle ball field in Knox County by far, probably West Central Illinois.
Oh yeah, maybe the entire state. I don't know. I've not seen all the wiffle ball fields in the area, but it's the best one I've ever played.
That's
on.
Right. It has a green monster. It's amazing over at Michael's. And so that is what the weekend, I think it's like the weekend of July 12th, or I'm sorry, August 12th. It's like August 11th through 13th or 12th through 14th or somewhere in there.
We're going to be seeing a lot of each other late July, early August.
I know. That's going to be nice. Also, two people from Canada are coming to the Weekend at the Lake. And then this week I received an email from Rafael in Brazil, and he is considering attending. So is an international event, folks.
Special just coming for that thing?
Rafael, yeah. No. Wow. That's cool.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. There's a lot of people that are very interested in coming. I mean, a lot of, and people are coming, bringing their kids and stuff like that too. So, it's going to be a lot of fun, and, you can, get the details at ivmv.com/lake. That'll take you to the Facebook event page. But I think it says there's like 15 people that are coming, but I think it's more like 30, from what I've heard, you know, people bringing, friends and stuff like that. And then I don't know, there's a lot of people that have marked interested, like 50 or something. So
we have to open the back 40.
Well, I already did. I already started like clearing an area back there that would make for a decent campground. So we may have to go back there.
Yeah. Maybe we could have a family campground, and we could have a rowdy campground.
Yeah.
We have figure it out. We will accommodate all tastes.
The quiet wing.
Go to bed at 9, we'll put you way out in the back 40. And
the quiet, studious people in the college.
Oh, man. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and we would love for you to join us for the weekend, and it's going to be a blast. Okay, so let's get to some listener questions. These are submitted through our Patreon-only, Patreon supporters Facebook group. And the first one comes from Lauren. And she says, I would personally love an update on the baby chicks. The chicks are doing well. I don't know. How old are they? Maybe about a month. And they're reaching like a weird stage where they eat and drink way too much. And they're like very skittish, and they make big messes because they're too small for me to put in with the regular chickens. So I know
you make messes.
That sounds like us.
Yeah.
Destroy their little hotel rooms like rock stars. Those kind of messes. Right, well,
and I promised Lauren that I would do like a little video to show them, but I forgot. So I'll try to remember to do that this weekend.
Corey starts producing videos of chicks.
I also have one of my hens is broody. And so, she's broody as all get out. So she's been sitting on eggs for 5 or 6 days. So here in a couple of weeks, we might have another little batch of chicks, which is nice because they can stay with the bigger ones throughout the whole time because the mother hen will like really defend them. So there's all the chicken.
What's the chicken news of the week?
Poultry talk you can handle.
That's right. Okay. The next one comes from Ryan, and he says, if we end up in the playoffs, do you see the pitching rotation changing at all from the regular season? Or do you think Madden will be confident with each of our 5 starters in a playoff game?
Man, that's so far away, Ryan.
Yeah, but I mean, usually it does change as you don't have to have a full 5-man rotation in the playoffs.
Especially not the short series to start.
Right.
Right. So I see it changing in that way, you know, like Hamill and Hendricks having a reduced role. And then, you know, who knows what over the course of the long season what's going to happen and, you know, what the future brings. But hopefully, you know, you look to have Arrieta, Lester, and Lackey have a pretty heavy role in the team's success in the playoffs.
Or if Hamill puts together a whole season, could easily be him there.
Well, I don't know if I'm counting on that happening, but I think, you know, like we saw in the playoffs last year, Hamill kind of had Madden had a quick hook with Hamill, and if that's a situation, if everybody's healthy, you know, you could almost see like kind of a Hamill-Hendricks joint shared start, shared outing where maybe Hamill goes 4 and then Hamill goes 4 and maybe Hendricks can go 3 or 4 and
maybe even Cahill and Warren start to pick up some of those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a good question, Ryan. It is hard to say right now. I think it all depends too on it. Do we see first half Hamill or do we see second half Hamill in September and October, and how's Hendricks pitching and how healthy is everybody? I think there's a lot of factors there. The next one here comes from Steven. He says, if the Cubs make a trade deadline deal for a young pitcher, can I request that it's Sonny Gray just so I can get a Cubs jersey that says Sonny Gray Real Estate on the back, which I thought was hilarious. And he says, sorry, dumb joke for the music nerds amongst our ranks. I think, you know what, that would be well worth it to get it personalized to say Sonny. And I don't think I've ever seen even the people that have their own names or they've got something personalized on the back, I don't know if I've ever seen like two lines, but I think that would be or deserving.
Just like the full like half circle of so long.
Well, I mean,
up one side and down the other.
Why don't you just go write in your diary, Stephen, and then if they do get Sonny Gray, we'll see how it feels to be something on, and we'll face the rising tide of their success.
Oh, there's probably like four people that got the. That was beautiful, Andy. I appreciate that.
Did you just come up with that on the spot, or did you have it written?
No, I came up with it on the spot. So
whoa!
Yeah,
nice work.
Wow. What's your favorite, Andy?
You could have mixed in. Album like, I got of theirs was the Pink album, and that's my favorite, I think.
Yeah. I really like How It Feels to Be Something On, although it wasn't my favorite at the time, but it's kind of become my favorite. But I could listen to Diary like anytime.
Yeah, that album's great.
Yeah. Okay, so that was a great question. Thanks, Steven. Okay, Dan here. He says, who is the best Cubs pinch hitter of all time? Is it Trevor Cahill?
Well, obviously. I guess that's a rhetorical question, huh?
It's two ABs. It's 500.
Okay, so do you guys have any opinion on this?
You really want us to think of the best?
I did look around a little bit, and I couldn't really find a ton of stats.
Okay, well, I spent more time on this question than I did on anything else with this episode. So
shoot, then.
Awesome.
All right.
Let's hear it.
In my opinion, and I think I'm going to make the case, the answer is Thad Bosley. who, by the way...
You're crazy. You are crazy.
By the way, somewhere around here, I have a Thad Bosley picture that is signed by Danny Rocket. I don't know where I put it. I thought it was right down here, but I don't see it. I must have moved it somewhere.
Just a little known fact is, do you know what Thad Bosley's full name is?
Is it Thaddeus?
It's Thaddeus. Just I-S. It's Thaddeus Bosley. Thaddeus. No middle name. At least according to Baseball Reference.
Okay, so here it is. This is why I think he is the best Cubs pinch hitter of all times. On Monday, August 12th, 1985, in a game against the Montreal Expos, in front of 28,195 spectators, Thad Bosley had the best single game pinch hitting performance in Cubs history. And the way that I measured it is that I used win probability added. And that was, by the way, his win probability added was 0.948, if you're curious. In the sixth inning, Thad Bosley, he came into the game and he pinch hit for Warren Brustar. Which I don't. I mean, 85 was right when I started following the Cubs. I do not remember Warren Brustar. So the Cubs were losing 6-3 at that point, and Bosley hit a 3-run home run to tie it up. And then he came up to bat again in the eighth inning when the Cubs were down 7-6, and he hit a 2-run homer to put the Cubs up 8-7, and that was the final score, 8-7. So he went 2-for-2 with 2 home runs and 5 RBI in a pinch hitting appearance. So I'm going to call Thad Bosley the best Cubs pinch hitter of all time just for that one performance in a game that meant nothing in 1985.
So that would have been 2 of his 7 home runs that season. I'm just looking at his line. Dude had 180 at-bats that season, and he hit 328, 391 OBP, 511 slugging, 902 OPS.
Wow. Huh.
He killed it in 85.
He especially killed it on August 12th.
Yeah, he did that. 2 out of his 7 home runs that season on that date.
Huh. Now, I didn't look at, you know, I could have looked at like career stuff, but I was that game kind of like, or you know, that result kind of stood out to me at first, and so I kind of started digging into that one. So
Lenny Harris did play for him in like 2003, so he wasn't particularly great for the Cubs, but one of the best pinch hitters of all time.
Can we agree?
Or I guess I should say like most used.
Right. Yeah. But can we agree on Thaddeus Bosley?
I will accept Thaddeus Bosley.
It's a good response. I like the line of thinking you took on it.
Okay. One more here. I think one more. Two more. Bill says, what are your thoughts on Travis Wood after last night? Is there a way to make him a better fit for the Cubs bullpen strategy? As I said before, I just don't have a lot of confidence in Travis Wood right now, and he just seems so hittable. He gave up that double to VR to lead off the 13th on Wednesday. But I don't know. You look at his splits, and his numbers really aren't that bad. And I don't really know why he makes me uncomfortable when he comes into pitch. And maybe it's just one of those things where you convince yourself of something, and then that's what you focus on, and you ignore information that indicates otherwise. I don't know, but I mean, his walks are up, his strikeouts are down, his BABIP is 200, which is 100 points lower than average and where it was last year. So you factor in that stuff, and that's how you get a FIP of 5.5, even though his ERA is around 4. But I don't know. I mean, you look at, like, you know, the batting average against, and, you know, in the splits, lefties and righties, and, you know, actually righties are hitting worse off of him. But I don't think that the Cubs are comfortable with certain parts of the bullpen right now, and I think we're going to start seeing them tinker with the bullpen, similarly to how they did last year when they kind of filtered through a lot of arms, many of them older. And I guess we're starting to see that, you know, as they sign Joe Nathan, who's on the DL right now, but should be back eventually. And I think that maybe we're going to see I feel like we're going to see that same thing again this year. Doesn't it feel like that to you guys?
Yeah, I think so. And one of our listeners, I think, said he's remotely connected to Joe Nathan and was saying that he's looking at a post All-Star break return, perhaps, to pitching.
Oh, yeah, so, you're right. Yeah.
I can't remember who that was. I wish I could give credit to who that was. Fudge. But at any rate, yeah, it's eerily familiar, you know, when you think about what they were doing last year and even in 2014 with grabbing kind of like former closers that were, you know, undergoing some convalescence, trying to make their way back to pitching health again.
Right.
Yeah. And I could definitely, I mean, they definitely could use the lefty help. So, I mean, you've got Wood and
Richard.
So, you know, a little more. I don't know. Neither of those guys, I think neither have been terrible, but neither give you like huge confidence.
Right.
I think. And so, yeah, maybe they could take a flyer on a couple of lefties and see what happens too.
Right. And Bob from Olean.
Aroldis Chapman. Yeah. Sorry.
No.
I decided to throw that in there for a little lefty help. That's probably going to be available. He and Anthony Rizzo would probably get along really well, I'm sure.
It would do nothing for the clubhouse dynamic.
Although Soler and Chapman could talk about the good old days in the homeland or something.
Right. One more here. Bob from Olean, he says, who gets to 100 home runs first, Hayward or Ross? So Ross is, of course, one home run away, and Hayward is two home runs away.
I'm going to go with Ross.
Man, that's tough. I don't know. I guess it depends on, do we think that Hayward maybe found his stroke with that first home run or, you know, somehow. And he had a 9-game hitting streak
right
heading into yesterday's game, which, so he basically like failed in a couple pretty big situations in this Brewers series. And people really really are taking Hayward to task on social media right now. And it's kind of irritating, given the fact that outside of those two instances, he seems to kind of be figuring it out. I don't know. I'll pick Hayward,
yeah,
even though I've been a Ross champion for a long time.
Well, I think Ross has the rest of the year to get a home run. And I think, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if we don't kind of see Ross go back to, it wouldn't surprise me if for a couple of weeks we don't see him just kind of getting like his one start with Lester, and, you know, because he carried, you know, so much of the burden.
Fedorovich.
Yeah. Oh. Well, I was well.
So they're saying because they're carrying Fedorovich.
Well, that too. But I think like Ross really kind of like, you know, he carried the weight while Montero was gone. And so I think with keeping three catchers on the roster, I think maybe we'll just see Ross catch Lester here for the next couple weeks, maybe. So I think Hayward could pretty easily get a couple home runs, you know,
oh, yeah,
in the next 2-3 weeks. So I'm going to pick Hayward. So
that's good. I like it when you get when I'm the only one. Cause that usually means.
What does that usually mean, Kurt?
Let's try to remember. Record, let's try to remember that we made
indicates that I'm usually
listen to him
on the right side.
Just as a little foot, I mean, okay, so I'm shifting gears here, but just as a little footnote to what you were saying, or just how Fedorovich came up, Matt Caesar is poised to do a rehab start, and so he's going to be back before too long, and so they're going to have to make some decisions. I would imagine Fedorovich.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I mean, they can't just send Fedorovich down because he doesn't have options. So,
and he's not going to make it through waivers.
Yeah, well, I have a hard time seeing him make it through waivers, as there, you know, probably are plenty of teams that could use a little catching help. So, yeah,
and I'm not real sure what I mean. I don't know. Well, okay, so let's say they let him go, and then there's another injury at the catcher position, you know, let's say over the next month or two, and they're not ready to bring up Contreras. You know, I was trying to think of other options. I guess they could bring up Taylor Davis, maybe, you know, if you're kind of just not
even catching that much. And now I don't think, is he?
I would imagine Contreras is getting the bulk of or the time
Davis
behind the plate.
Go. Did Davis go to Tennessee?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where he's at right now. That's a good question. But, yeah, that's the other thing is, yeah, the Cubs don't necessarily want to lose Fedorovich, you know, just because of, like you said, Wilson Contreras is not necessarily ready to step in there. And then, you know, David Ross has talked about, you know, how he is not an everyday starter. Miguel Montero's, you know, had been dealing with injuries. So they don't want to necessarily just lose Fedorovich right now. So that, I mean, hence the reason they're even carrying three catchers
right
at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how they handle it. So the Cubs are heading to San Francisco for a series late night, Friday night. I think it's like a 9 o'clock game, night game on Saturday. And then it looks like the ESPN Sunday night game on Sunday. So how do these pitching matchups look, Kurt?
All right. So you start tomorrow with Arrieta versus Peavy. Thankfully, this is not the Peavy of old. It's this old guy Peavy who's much angrier. And doesn't pitch as well. He started off 1-4 with a 7.43 ERA. He's had a couple of decent outings, but mostly looks pretty hittable this year. So, as we know, any pitcher can kind of go either way based on that start. But, you know, that looks like a pretty favorable matchup. Saturday, Lester versus Kane. Kane also not off to a good start. He's 0-5 with a 5.48 ERA. His last two starts have been pretty good, so the 0-5 is a little misleading. In his last two starts, he only gave up 3 runs in 15 innings, so he's been looking better than he's started, but certainly not having the years like he has in the past. So again, that looks a little bit favorable to the Cubs. And then Sunday kind of flip-flops the other way, where it's Hendricks versus Bumgarner. Bumgarner's 5-2 with a 2.45, and his last start was a complete game, 5-hit, 1-run performance against the Padres. So he's kind of looking like his old self lately, and that one's going to be tough. So,
yeah, I think you have to feel pretty good.
And we've said that kind of before, where like you're facing Scherzer and they go out and do really well. But, you know, a guy like hard throwing lefty is always a tough matchup, no matter how good your lineup is, and when it's him, it's even tougher.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to feel pretty good about the first two games, the matchups there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, with that Hendricks-Bumgarner game, it's not the best matchup for the Cubs. But like you said, I mean, they've kind of been able to handle other top-line starters this season. And I think that if the Cubs do what they were doing up until about a week ago, driving up pitch counts, yeah, getting starters out, and getting into the bullpen, you know, I think that's a game that maybe you could steal.
Yeah, if they can get to them early, I do think there's an opportunity there. But
right. Well, I mean, yeah, even if you can just have, I mean, the Cubs have had some games where they'll really not do, you know, they maybe won't score a run in the first inning, but the pitcher ends up with somewhere between 25 and 30 pitches in that first inning. I mean, that really puts a lot of pressure on the pitcher. You know, if you can, you know, get Fowler up there leading off and just foul some balls off and end up like, you know, there was a game, I think it was in the Padres series, where, you know, he ended up with eight pitches in the first at bat. And I mean, that makes a huge difference if you can kind of string a couple of those and string together some full counts and fouling off pitches. And I think that might be kind of the recipe for Bumgarner. I don't know. I mean, it just seems like that seems to work against, like I said, those top line starters. So,
yeah. But it'd be great to see them do something against him too, especially sure, sort of, yeah, leaving the next day to head to St. Louis and kind of ride some momentum, if you, depending on what happens in the first two games, and take that into St. Louis. But
right, yeah. Okay, so Andy, we've actually received some email about Rube Waddell recently. Apparently, did you guys know that there was a band named Rube Waddell?
No.
I mean, you guys got that email, didn't you?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, I thought it was from Darren. He brought it to our attention. I thought he emailed all three of us in it. Maybe he didn't. So anyway,
Yeah, I did get it. Never mind. I'm sorry. I was like, oh my gosh. Yeah. There's a band named Rube Waddell. That's amazing.
Right. So did you guys happen to listen to the band?
No, I didn't have a chance.
Okay.
Puig Destroyer?
No, you're going to want to though. But I just kind of like looked around their website, 'cause it looks very like, in a way it's kind of modern, but in a way it has like some elements of like 1998 to it. And so I here's the description of the band. Okay. Their fourth album offers 17 all new independently produced tracks that take listeners from the Latin influences of the Mission District up through a healthy dose of lo-fi swamp punk blues, from sea shanties to Western country kitsch, from Broadway-styled vocal performances to Mideast-infused melodies and other places one wouldn't think of going. So, if you want to know what this sounds like, it sounds like Latin lo-fi punk swamp punk country Western Broadway Middle East.
Wow.
I definitely want to listen.
That's how they describe themselves.
Quite an amalgamation of styles. Yeah.
So yeah, Rube Waddell. I guess check them out if you're into any of those.
I did. I went to their site and they have no mention of Rube. Oh, there it is. Never mind. I take it back. I was gonna say, in their about page, they have no mention of the real Rube Waddell.
I mean, if I'm gonna start,
they have a separate link called The Man. The Man.
If I'm gonna,
it's all about Rube.
If I'm gonna start a band, and name it after Rube Waddell, I mean. Can we come up with a better name than just Rube? Like, I'm thinking like Rube and the Waddells, or some, I don't know, just Rube Waddell.
Or just Rube.
Rube. I don't know. But then we also got an email from Michael from Galesburg. Do you want to kind of summarize that, Andy?
Michael mentions that there was a listener looking for a Rube Waddell jersey, and he notes that the MLB didn't start putting jerseys until 1932. So it might be difficult to get a Rube specific jersey. But he lists this website called ebbets.com, you know, if that can make, you know, what you want. So he was saying you could try that out if you want to.
That's a really cool website, by the way, too. I looked and they have a lot of like really old, like throwback type t-shirts and stuff. So if you're into like historical baseball stuff, that's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah. So That's pretty much it.
He also asks in the email something about, do you have the email pulled up in front of you, Andy? I'm sorry.
I do. Yeah.
He has something about, he has a question for our listeners.
Oh, okay. So I'll read that. I didn't know if you wanted me to mention that or not, but, sure. He says, I understand you have some former Expo fans and current Cub fans that listen. Is there a way to ask them if they have a new Montreal, ask them if a new Montreal team would work? From the document on the MLB network, it made it sound like it was a hockey culture and that it was hard to find owners who care about baseball. So Michael is just wondering, you know, anybody from Montreal, you know, from Canada, if you are able to speak to this question, and then, just, would a team work there again?
Yeah. So,
in Montreal.
So,
or, yeah. So,
I know Ian is in Montreal because he sent me this Expos hat that's right behind me here. But I think the best way, if you're in Canada or have any connections to the Montreal area or know anything, that, you know, if you'd be able to answer Michael's question, I think the best thing to do would be to leave us a voicemail. You can do that through our app, our iOS or Android app. You can tap contact the show and then call the show. Or you can just dial 309-517-0624. But yeah, I think that's an interesting question. And with, you know, the commissioner saying that that's a place that, you know, expansion could happen. I'd be interested in knowing if baseball is sustainable in Montreal, but anyway, Andy, back to Rube Liddell. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, when they did that game, the Blue Jays play there, they sold it out like 50 some thousand people, so at least for the short term they proved they would come out and support.
Yeah. So you have a Rube Waddell story for us this week, Andy.
In 1898, Rube was with Detroit Tigers, and for spring training or spring practice, they trained against they played a series of exhibition games with the Vanderbilt College or Vanderbilt University, I don't know, team. And so some of these college kids got to face Rube Waddell. And so one of their players also happened to be an aspiring journalist, I guess, and his name was Grantland Rice. And he wrote about Rube that day. So I'm going to actually read some of what he wrote about him. Grantland says, Rube was written all over him. You could tell it a mile away. And when you saw him shoot a couple in toward the plate, you could also tell from a mile away, which is about as far as all batsmen who faced him stood from the plate, that he had only to get control to be an unbeatable boxman. He had only a fair curve that debutant year, and not enough control to hit the Pacific Ocean with a shotgun. But smoke, he had more than a burning oil well. You could hear it zip, but you couldn't see it, a fact that immediately took all the rugged ambition out of those who faced him. And then he goes on to talk about how he sent two players to the hospital.
Oh my gosh.
So he hit a guy in the jawbone and broke this dude's jawbone, and he was in the hospital for a month, apparently. And then in the very next inning in that same game, his own catcher took off his mask and asked, you know, like signaled to Rube, like asked Rube to wait until he adjusted his strap. But because Rube was so impatient, he didn't wait. He yelled, "Look out," and just threw the ball anyway. And Grantland notes, in place of looking out, the catcher looked up, and he also went to the hospital. That's all it says. So,
like, why would you say look out and throw to the catcher?
By definition, is there to catch. Here from Grantland's description. It says, Rube wasn't very popular with his bunch that spring. He broke their best bats and beaned their best batters and made a frolic out of the trip. He had stuff, but it was too raw and unwieldy to be confined to any restricted spot 18 inches across. And it was a long spell before he found enough time between fishing trips to work upon control.
Oh, man.
So that's it. That's the Rube story.
There needs to be a movie about this guy. I mean,
oh yeah.
I mean, what a. I mean, I can't think of who would maybe play him, but there are so many things. I mean, just in the stories that you tell, you know, and that you've relayed to us. I don't know. Somebody's got to do it. There needs it could become the best baseball movie of all time, I think.
For sure. In the right hands, it could be pretty good.
Yeah. And call it Rube and the Waddells.
That's all right. We have a band that can do the soundtrack with, you know, the little bit of country western kitsch with Broadway style vocal performances. And
Corey, how would you feel about Will Ferrell playing him?
You know, I could kind of, I don't know actors well enough, but I don't know. I guess I may not be as excited about it if it was Will Ferrell.
Would you choose like Jeff Garlin?
Oh God, I wouldn't even watch it.
To play Rube.
Nope. Not even going to watch it. All right. Well, that does it for this 400th episode of our podcast. We have a winner for the t-shirt contest we talked about on the last episode. We did a drawing from the names of people that purchased the new version of Katie Days by the Lakeside. And the winner is Chadwick Whiteley, or Whitley. I think it's Whiteley. So Chadwick, send me an email, Corey@IVMV.com, Corey, and with your address and what size shirt you want. And I will get that in the mail. This episode is brought to you by all of our Patreon supporters. We have some new supporters this week. Justin in Northbrook. Dan from Reno, Nevada, who comes in at the Ryan Sandberg level. Thank you. Hannah from Oswego, Illinois. Chris from Watonga, Oklahoma. And Chris from Murrieta, California. Chris, the king of beer. I'm not sure if that's a title he would appreciate, but I'm impressed with his knowledge of beer and his... Untapped. I guess he's just prolific on there. So thanks to Justin, Dan, Hannah, Chris, and Chris, and all of our Patreon supporters. Patreon helps us pay the podcasting bills, helps us upgrade equipment, and fund our live events like our tailgate in Milwaukee this July and the weekend at the lake. And if you like what we're doing, tell a friend about our podcast. We have a free iOS and Android app that they can listen to our episodes on. And if you really like what we're doing, then check out the Patreon campaign and the perks that you can receive. Go to patreon.com/IVMV. That's patreon.com/IVMV. Again, I'm going to play Danny Rocket's Ivy Ingione here at the end of the show. Thank you for listening. And number 400 is in the books. Here's to 400 more. And we will be back on Sunday night. And until then, go Cubs.
When I lay down with my baby late at night, underneath Chicago's light polluted sky, we snuggle up to my iPhone and open up an app. You know what app I'm talking about.
Set me free, IVNV, talking Cubbies. You're so much better than TV. Kurt and Corey, laugh with Andy. You are my favorite Cubs-related podcast ever. Water this marginal analysis. Drinking RTs, it'll beer. Hoping it'll be our year.
IVNV, IVNV, IVNV.
Playing Chuck Mangione.
They'll even take you fishing.
One of them lives out on a lake.
Better subscribe to Patreon, or IVNV will be gone. Some of the nicest guys I've met, now they can
set me free. IVNV, talking Cubbies. You're so much better than TV. Kurt and Corey, laugh with Andy. You are my favorite Cubs-related podcasters.
This is Andrew Bellison, the voice of Wrigley Field, and you're listening to the IVNV Podcast.
In this episode of
chicken, beer, fish tween, baseball cards, muscle flexes, scary stats, strong opinions, marginal analysis.
Go, Cavs, go!
I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey.
Hello, it's Andy.
And Herb.
There are 25 chickens a few feet away from me.
And there's a dead mouse under there.
Yeah, and play Checkmate Junie.
Whiskey and ginger ale is all I know.
Turn an incredible start.
So thank you for listening, and until this weekend, go Cubs.
Is this guy a Puritan?
Set me free, I'm the envy. Talking Cubbies, you're so much better than TV. Kurt and Corey, laugh with Andy. You are my favorite Cubs related.
I don't ever want to miss marginal analysis. Drinking artisanal beer, hoping it'll be a year.
IBNB, playing Chuck McGee.